This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When Hurricane Katrina howled out of the Gulf of Mexico, it reduced much of the Gulf Coast of Mississippi to matchsticks and rubble. Entire communities weren't just damaged, but obliterated. Now, with the cleanup well underway, a group of architects, planners, environmentalists, and developers meets in Biloxi, Mississippi tomorrow to think about what to do with this enormous blank slate. The gathering is called a charrette, a term that dates back to 19th century France. Today it refers to a brainstorming process that architects use to develop solutions to design challenges, especially when time is short. Rebuilding the Gulf Coast will be an enormous financial and structural challenge. If it's planned badly, it could leave once distinctive communities as sprawling conglomerations of strip malls, casinos, and high-rise condos. Governor Haley Barbour has summoned this charrette organized by the Congress for the New Urbanism. Over 100 architects, development experts, and planners from around the country will meet with public officials to begin to establish plans and priorities. Inevitably, some interests will get less weight than others, and some will be unhappy with compromise. Today we'll talk with mayors about the specific challenges of their cities and with a new urbanist who's leading the brainstorming session to find out how this process will work. If you're from the area, call us with your concerns. If your town or city or neighborhood has been rebuilt from the ground up, call and tell us how you went about it, what worked, and what didn't. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. We begin with Emily Waxter Pettis. She's Mississippi legislative reporter for the Associated Press and joins us from her office in Jackson, Mississippi. Good of you to join us today.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks.
I understand the Senate has recently passed a bill to allow casinos to be built not along the barges on the coastline where they were previously restricted, but inland. What's the significance of that?
The significance of that is that really for the first time since Mississippi allowed casinos to come into the state 15 years ago, they're going to be able to get off the water and move onto solid ground. There's always been a big concern among the casino industry that really it's just a constant threat with the big storms coming up from the coast. And so what they'll be able to do is just have safer structures. They're saying it'll be easier to get insurance and financing to rebuild as well.
And it should be pointed out, casinos are the engine of development, not just along the Gulf Coast, but an important contributor to the state's economy.
That's true. That's true. Before Katrina, the coast casinos alone were employing anywhere between 14,000 and 17,000 people. If you look at spinoff jobs, it was closer to 50,000. And if you have a region that has about 400,000 residents, you can see that was pretty significant.
Now, they are not, though, the only industry along the Gulf Coast. There's plenty of fishing of various sorts and, of course, refineries and industry, shipbuilding in other parts.
That's true. Northrop Grumman Ship Systems in Pascagoula, used to be called Ingalls Shipyard, is the single largest private employer in the state. It had about 12,000 people working there before the storm.
And as the state legislature looks ahead to this redevelopment process, of course, they're going to be asked to pass a lot of bills along. They're going to be asked to pay for a lot of this, and they're going to have to maneuver a lot of this. As we look ahead to this charrette tomorrow, I wonder if there's some who are concerned that their turf may be invaded by this process.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think a lot of longtime coast residents in particular are really worried that what's going to happen with redevelopment is that simply the eclectic character of the coast is going to be lost.
That it's all going to end up looking pretty much the same.
Exactly, exactly. And what people fear, I think, is just walls and walls of concrete condominiums blocking off the beach views and kind of, taking away the personality that used to be there.
And that, the interests of the developers might get a little bit more weight than the interests of the individual homeowner.
Oh, sure. That's absolutely a concern.
What is the legislature worried about?
They just completed a special session late Friday night, and I think this session alone was to deal mostly with the immediate issues that could be dealt with before Mississippi knows how much money it will be getting from the federal government. And so concern has to do with, do you let the casinos go on shore? Is it a good public policy decision to make? And the House and Senate both passed the bill. It's awaiting the governor's signature right now, and he will sign it.
And there's also a concern, I would think, that over the question of taxes, do you raise taxes to pay for some of this development, or do you keep them as low as possible to encourage private business?
Right. Well, the governor's made it very clear that he opposes any tax increases, especially at a time like this. He doesn't want to, he says, put any additional burden on people, you know, raise the cost of doing business. Or, you know, I mean, frankly, there are a lot of people who don't have jobs. And so if you look at something like a sales tax increase, that, I mean, it just may not get you very much.
But they were specifically talking about a new 1% tax on casino revenues.
At one time, that was a point of discussion. Maybe more than you want to know here, but the, most of the casinos along the Mississippi coast sit on public titlings, and they pay leases for that. And so kind of two issues they had to deal with the casinos. One was, do you let them go on land? And two is, what do you do about those titlings leases? They don't bring in a huge amount of money every year. It's about $7.5 million. It pays for things like piers and artificial reefs. And so the question came up, the state Senate had passed a proposal, instead of the titlings leases, just put a 1% assessment on the casinos. The governor said, no, that's essentially putting a new tax on them. So that got squelched. They just did a kind of an update or a revision of the titlings leases without raising taxes on them.
And some of that has to deal with, of course, who gets what cut of which money, and we'll leave that for the moment. But I wonder if you're beginning to sense an us versus them a feeling that, you know, big developers against preservationists, for example.
I think it may be a little early for that, but I think that there's a fear that that will pop up.
And what do people feel if we keep hearing about this idea of building it better than last time? What do they want to fix?
They have a lot of transportation issues on the coast that officials have been wanting to deal with for years down there. And so essentially with a clean slate, here's the chance to do that. The railroad tracks run right through the middle of the cities of Pass Christian, Long Beach, Gulfport, Biloxi, Ocean Springs. And for years this has been a problem that people will, you know, either traffic will get held up for a long time or people will run in front of the trains and get hit and die.
Level crossings.
Yeah, and so one of the things the governor has talked about wanting to do possibly, and I don't know where this stands right now, but contact the railroad companies and see if they'd be willing to move those tracks out of civilization, as it were, just further north. So you have issues like that. So many of the highways and bridges are torn up right now. And so there's going to be a lot of money spent trying to rebuild these things.
Emily Wagster-Pettis, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
Sure.
Emily Wagster-Pettis covers the Mississippi Legislature for the Associated Press and joined us from her office in Jackson. And let's turn now to somebody who's going to be very involved with the reconstruction of the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Brent Warr is the mayor of Gulfport, Mississippi, and he joins us now by phone from his office. And, Mayor, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm proud to be here.
As you look ahead to, both the challenge and the opportunity of rebuilding the damaged parts of Gulfport, what are you looking at?
Well, plenty of opportunity, and like you said, plenty of damage. It is unbelievable how devastated we are. I was here for Hurricane Camille, and I'll tell you, this storm is far, far worse. But we do have a bright future and a lot of opportunity coming our way.
What are the interests you're trying to balance in this effort?
Well, and that's a great question. You know, we've got a lot of balances having to do with historic preservation or recreation, to be honest with you. We lost the majority of our historic structures here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Biloxi has a home that was built in 1726, and we had many homes from the early 1800s and older in Gulfport that were all completely wiped away. So our desire is to rebuild them. Of course, the condominium craze that's going on nationally, mm-hmm. not missed Gulfport. You know, we have the most incredible views that anyone has ever seen, just overlooking the Gulf. It's just magnificent. So a lot of people desire to be on the coast in condos. We have a lot of interest there. And then, of course, the gaming interests, the casinos are here and looking for their future and trying to define how they can best fit in as well. So a lot of balancing here. The neighborhoods, of course, you know, we have to rebuild them and try to make them better. It's very interesting.
As you look ahead to this this opportunity, are you looking to build a town that looked much the same as Gulfport looked a couple of months ago, or are you looking to create something new and different?
Well, both, I guess. You know, the truth of it is what we say is we wish that we didn't have this opportunity right now, but now we want to make the best of it. And you know, in the 70s and early 80s, we didn't have much of an economy here. Hurricane Camille came in here and really devastated us. That was in 1969, so we struggled for quite some while. Well, now that's not the case here. We are booming. Actually, single-family residential properties since the hurricane have appreciated over $50 per square foot. So we, I believe, have the opportunity to keep the best from the old, but not go back and recreate the things that were done in the past just because we were happy to have anything happening. And by that I mean, you know, architecturally weak structures, not physically weak, but from an aesthetic standpoint. And try to drive things into a more unique Southern classic style architecture that is pleasing to everyone's eye, we hope.
Well, let's get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us, or send us an email, totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Greg calling from San Diego, California.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Good afternoon where we are, but go ahead.
We were involved with the Cedar Fire 2 years ago and lost the community of Scripps Ranch, and we found that the Internet proved to be a very useful resource, not only to share the needs and resources of the community, somebody needs a bed, a place to stay, but also as a sounding board for the rebuilding of the community. There's a lot of smaller neighborhoods, each with their own homeowners' rules, and it served well to be able to discuss with your neighbors what you were going to do and how did you get around this regulation, and it just proved to be a very good
sounding board, sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, a sounding board and a community that people could come to, because one of the problems that we had, and I'm sure the people in Gulfport have, is that they're members of the community, but they're not in the community. In other words, they're 100, 500 miles away, and the Internet connected everyone so that we could remain a community.
Well, Mayor, is that something you've considered?
That's a great idea. I have not considered that, but it does sound like a wonderful opportunity for us. I'm writing it down as we speak.
Well, we already had ScrippsRanch.org. It's a very tight community and a lot of pride in the development of the community, the schools, all that stuff, and we have a newsletter, and there was always a good sense of community. And we had that already established, and it was, you know, it was used sparingly. But after the fire, people started writing down scriptsranch.org, and the community just came connected with that resource. And if you can establish something, whether it's gulfport.com or whatever, you form a sense of community identity.
Greg, thanks very much for the call. Mayor, stay with us, if you will. We're going to take a short break. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and we're talking today about the Mississippi Gulf Coast, what's been lost, what may rise in its place, and how the process of deciding what gets built where and when. Our guest right now is Mayor Brent Warr. He's the mayor of Gulfport, Mississippi. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And, Mayor, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about the process of this charrette that starts tomorrow. I'm sure you've heard about it.
Oh, yes. It's exciting.
And what are you excited about?
Well, to have this level of talent focusing on our community is unprecedented in America. And the people who have agreed to do this, I mean, are giving very graciously of their time and their energy. These are probably the best planners in the world, arguably. And to have them here, like I said earlier, it's an opportunity I wish that we didn't have, but it's a wonderful opportunity for us now, and I'm grateful to them.
Are you worried, though, a lot of these people coming for this meeting are from away, as they might say there, far outside influences on your community?
No, sir. I'm not worried about it at all. They will engage us. They have agreed to do that, and, of course, they're not passing down a mandate or any ordinance that we have to follow. But we'd be crazy not to listen to them. These are the most accomplished people in this industry. And I look at it as, when you're ill and you need help, you don't care where the physician comes from. You just want to know that they're the best. So I look at it as we're bringing in a team of the best that are going to give us incredible guidance. And I'm grateful to have them.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Ruth. Ruth calling us from Burnsville, North Carolina.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Hello, Ruth.
I just want to make a quick redevelopment session suggestion for the beautiful Mississippi Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. I used to live there about 4.5 years ago.
Really?
I would like to suggest that the flood-prone areas that were worst and hardest hit during Hurricane Katrina be redeveloped as a series of interconnecting parklands connected by boardwalks and walkways, and then that the major development be on the slightly higher ground, but that a large park system, and this would be a social gathering spot like New York Central Park.
Is that something that might be considered, Mayor Moore?
I know that we will consider. That is a great idea, and we've talked about it before.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind now, this water event was totally unprecedented, and some of the highest ground in the city that has never, ever flooded, never been considered anywhere near a flood zone, got water. Like she said, the most flood-prone areas would be the ones where we
mm-hmm.
focus on that. And I believe that she has predicted the future. I think that we will do that.
I was recently in Rapid City, South Dakota, and they had a terrible flood. A creek overrose its banks and hit a lot of particularly low-income housing that was built down there. That's all been transformed into parkland since.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had some buyouts and things like that here in the past as well, but nothing to the scale that the lady who called in was speaking of. And I get it. I understand exactly what she's talking about. I know that we will look very, very carefully at doing that.
Ruth, thank you very much.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Ruth.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
And Mayor Warr, thank you for your time today. We know you're busy.
Well, thank you, sir. And keep us in your prayers, and we appreciate your time.
Mayor Brent Warr is mayor of Gulfport, Mississippi, and he joined us from his office there. With us now to talk more about the process that Mississippi has chosen to embark on is Steve Muzon. He's helping to put together the architectural efforts of the Mississippi Renewal Forum, the charrette we've been talking about. He joins us now by phone from Florida. Nice to have you with us today.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. Tell us a little bit more about how this charrette operates.
Well, a charrette, first of all, when you say the word, people say, what in the world is that?
Yeah, that's what I said first, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually it's a French word that means little cart, and the École des Beaux-Arts was the greatest architecture school for over 100 years, located in Paris. And what would happen is that the students would work in their apartments, and then when the project was due, the professor's assistant would come around pulling a charrette behind him, and when they heard the wheels of the charrette clanging over the cobblestones of the streets, they would run out and take the drawings. Well, supposedly just leave the drawings on the cart, but what they would in actuality do, because they were never done on time, is they would jump up on the charrette and frantically be trying to finish the drawing as it was being pulled through the street. So the term has come to mean a period of frantic design activity in general, and the modern charrette, what you have is, because of the fact that you get everybody involved with the process in the same room for a number of days, and the feedback loops, instead of, you know, meeting with the client and withdrawing to your office for several weeks and doing some more design and meeting with them again weeks later, the feedback loop is actually measured in hours rather than weeks. And so at the end of a typical week-long charrette, you may have as much work done as you would in a normal 6 to 8 month planning process, you know, done the conventional manner. So it's an enormously efficient way of going about work.
Yet, how do you prevent those with, let's not be too shy about this, the deepest pockets from making sure that their ideas get the most interest?
Well, you know, the way that we do that is normally, now again, this is going to be unprecedented because most of the residents, you know, aren't there anymore. They have been dispersed to Jackson and Montgomery and Birmingham and so forth. And so it's going to be a bit of a tougher situation there. But typically what will happen in a new urbanist planning charrette is that anybody that wants to come, I mean, these public meetings in the evening are advertised far and wide, and whoever wants to come can come and can voice their opinion on issues. And what we do, what just so totally shocks people is the fact that we will, you know, they'll come in one night and say, this is a horrible idea, or you need to consider this, or mm-hmm. that, or the other. By the very next night, their idea has actually been taken, properly designed, and beautifully illustrated by some of the illustrators that are there. And they say, oh, wait, you really believe me. You really listen to me. You know, which the buy-in you get is enormous in the normal scenario like that. And matter of fact, so much so that normally, when the people are normally still there, at a later council meeting or something like that, if someone stands up to complain, they will normally be shouted down by their fellow citizens, because they'll say, hey, look, you had a chance to come and talk about this when it's being designed. You didn't come. So you missed your opportunity, you know. So it's this tremendously inclusive thing. The good news is, though, what we know is because the new urbanists have been studying what we call the most loved places, the places that the average people in an area love the most, value the highest, and so forth. Because we've been studying those places for years or decades and are using them as our inspiration and our patterns, we know the deck is actually stacked in our favor, in the sense that that what we're trying to design is what the average people love the most anyway. So,
well, we'll get to back to new urbanism in just a moment, but let's bring another voice into the conversation. This is Mayor A.J. Holloway of Biloxi, Mississippi, and he's joining us from his office there. Good to have you on the program, sir.
Thank you.
Are you planning to go to that charrette, the Mississippi Renewal Forum, tomorrow?
Yeah, Wednesday is the meeting that I'm going to. I believe it starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what are you hoping to hear?
Well, I'm hoping we'll be that we'll come up with a number of options for us to consider as we go about rebuilding our city.
Well, options for what? I mean, tell us a little bit about what Biloxi lost in this hurricane.
Oh, well, we lost whole areas just totally devastated on East Biloxi, which is the oldest section of our city. We lost 5,000 homes in the city of Biloxi. And Biloxi is a peninsula, of course, and the East End, probably from, well, I was going to name a street, but that wouldn't do any good.
Not for most people, no, sir.
And, but anyway, about 2 or 3 miles going from west to east and from north to south on a peninsula, which is about, in some places, less than a mile wide, was just totally wiped out.
So what's unusual about this disaster, well, a lot of things unusual, but one of the things unusual is rather than a house here or there, you've had entire neighborhoods squashed
flat. Entire neighborhoods, that's correct.
So there is an opportunity to redo something on a grand scale if that's what you wanted to do.
Well, yes, and that's what we need to do. This is a low-lying area of Biloxi, and I'm sure FEMA is going to increase the elevation status of the what we have now is a 13-foot. And they just talk about going up to 17 feet.
So another, you had to be 13 feet above
above sea level.
And now it's going to be, you think, 17?
17, uh-huh.
And what's that going to mean for that low-lying area?
Well, what it's going to mean is going to mean that the with the price of material that's going up and with the cost of building, it's going to be very expensive building. And a lot of the people that live in this part of our city were the low to moderate income. So it's going to be very hard for them to be able to build back. Also, another problem we have in that area of the city is the code. When that area of the city was built, we didn't have codes at that time. That's how old those neighborhoods are.
Building codes.
So right now, a great number of the homeowners will not meet the setback requirements that we have in our code of ordinances today.
That's been put in since, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, we have a real problem trying to work with the people to rebuild.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. Jim is calling us. Jim from Endicott, New York.
Hi there. I used to live in Biloxi, Mississippi. My dad was crew chief in the Air Force there, so I've been through a few hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful area near the Gulf. As a child, I recall fishing with my dad, catching huge garfish and giant sea turtles and other exotic wildlife. I too would like to see some of the floodplains return to the environment, but in the areas that will be developed, like New Orleans, here's an opportunity to build a model for sustainability, a modernistic city that incorporates alternative energy, recycling, and new concepts for housing that are more energy efficient. I think Japan has already started doing this. We could possibly contact them for some of their ideas.
Mayor Holloway, is that something you'd consider?
Oh, yeah, we'd consider anything.
And,
by the way, Keesla took a big hit. The Keesla Air Force Base lost, I forget how much housing, I'd be something like 17 housing units they lost.
And, Jim, that must have been where your dad was based.
Yeah, I have nothing but fond memories of that area.
Mm. Let me get Steve Muzan back on the line with us, at the urbanist and author and architect. Are some of those ideas that Jim's talking about, would you suspect that they will come up at the charrette?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that they will. We're going to look at all sorts of things and trying to create a number of different tools that each municipality can either choose to use or not use according to what works for them. A couple of things that that we're trying to balance here. On the one hand, there's enormous good memories of people both that have been visitors, such as myself, frequently to the area, and then people that live there for years, of the architecture that was there. And so, on the one hand, we want to have something that we want to be suggesting architecture that resonates. On the other hand, there are the issues of sustainability and efficiency and high performance and these sorts of things. Incidentally, it was actually the ancient architecture, the traditional architecture that did those things the best, because, you know, 150 years ago, if you weren't efficient at heating and cooling, without, you know, you didn't have electricity to or heating oil or whatever, and so if you weren't efficient, you know, people died. They'd either freeze to death or have a heat stroke or something like that. So we feel like that there's some lessons within the traditional architecture of the region that have been long forgotten that we want to help to remember, that will help produce a high-performance architecture that nonetheless resonates with people and that they will love and want to go back to.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. We're talking about rebuilding the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Mayor Holloway, am I hearing your concern right that there's going to be a problem for the, well, perhaps predictably, for the least well-off in your city?
Well, it's going to be a balancing act, really. You know, I mean, as I said, these were the old homes that was over 100 years old, a lot of them. And, you know, they built next door to their mother and their daddy and their grandmas and grandpas, and then they subdivided up. You got 30-foot lots by 50 and those types of things. So it's going to be a challenge to meet that the elevation and the setback requirements. That's where you waive for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, if we want to do that or not.
Yeah, waving, obviously, recent experience suggests, may not be safe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's get another caller on the line. Anna is with us from Long Beach, Mississippi.
Hi. I wanted to bring up the point of the element of distrust there is among many residents of the Gulf Coast, just because of prior to Hurricane Katrina, there were about 55 high-rise condo developments beginning. And so part of the local culture seemed to already being sold off to developers. And so I think many residents don't exactly trust the city leaders that they want grasp at the offers developers make and take away the charm that used to be there.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Holloway?
Yes, that's true. And there's a lot of rumors flying around that the city's buying all the property up or is promoting that, but that's not the case. Most of the condos were on Front Beach. We're not talking about the Front Beach here. We're talking about the inland on the peninsula, not on the Front Beach of it.
Mm-hmm.
But Those condos was all going to be an issue that's going to be, it's not going away.
Yeah.
I think the property values are going to increase and not decrease.
Steve Muzon, how might the Charette deal with this issue of mistrust?
Well, you know, the thing that the new urbanists typically do, as opposed to you know, dealing with the typical developer scenario, what we try to reposition things as is you know, if you have a developer, in recent times, people are thinking about, well, that greedy, selfish developer. However, if you're thinking about somebody as a town founder or a neighborhood founder, those are the people that people actually put statues up to, you know, years later. And so we try to in as much as possible, reframe the whole development issue in terms of neighborhood founding and neighborhood making and neighborhood healing, as opposed to just land development. And if you approach it that way, it actually works out better for everybody. I mean, what you're actually creating a community, as opposed to just creating sellable real estate. But in creating a community, the real estate actually sells, you know, it becomes more valuable because people value community more than they do just a plot of land. And so it really is a, well, let me put it this way. The New Urbanism is actually the first movement that I'm aware of in at least a century of American history that this many people can get behind. I mean, almost every aspect of society.
I'm going to have to stop you there because I'm afraid we're out of time. Anna, thank you very much for the call. And Mayor Holloway, we appreciate your time today as well.
Thank you.
Today we're talking about the results of Hurricane Katrina along the Mississippi Gulf Coast and the rebuilding effort that's now underway and the difficulty of trying to preserve the delicacy of antebellum architecture character while the big industry in the area is casinos. Joining us from Miami, Florida, is urbanist and architect Steve Muzon. He's coordinating, along with his sister Susan Henderson, the architectural effort around the Mississippi Renewal Forum. It's called a charrette. And Steve, we've been talking around this idea of new urbanism earlier in the program. What is that exactly?
Basically, it's the notion that instead of just simply carpeting the land with undifferentiated sprawl that might look like Mississippi to Montana and you don't know what, that instead you're creating in the neighborhood structure, that is, everything is bounded by the size of a neighborhood, which in the U.S. is a quarter of a mile radius, that it is a series of neighborhoods that are compact and mixed use and walkable, meaning that that driving actually is a choice, not a necessity. You know, if you're in many suburban areas, if you don't have a car and can't drive, you literally die because you can't. I mean, there's so many things you can't do. But if you're in a place that's compact, mixed use, and walkable, then you can walk to your daily needs if you want to, or you can drive if you want to also. Mm-hmm. And so that's the that's really the core notion of it is those three things and the neighborhood structure.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. This is Alan. Alan's calling up from Pass Christian, Mississippi.
Hello, this is Alan Dubazon calling from Pass Christian. I lost my home there on the coast about 600 feet off of Highway 90. And I, as well as our other neighbors, there's four or five of us that have met together, and we've discussed, you know, what are we going to do from here? Where are we going to go from here? And number one, I want to commend and appreciate the efforts of Mayor Holloway, Mayor War, Mayor Skelly, and Mayor McDonald from Pass Christian, Long Beach, Gulfport, Biloxi, respectively, for their efforts thus far. And just to let these guys know our prayers are with them and leading us through this recovery effort and trying to get back on our feet. I guess as those who have lost our homes and are trying to figure out what we're going to do from now, the comment I'd like to make and like to hear a response back is, how are we going to maintain the property? My family goes back 300 years with the landing of Iberville, and we'd like to know that we can continue to maintain and sustain the way of life that we've come to know through all these generations and have paid taxes and invested in the community.
Are you afraid of some grand plan that may be imposed on the community?
Possibly there's a lot of fear, and not that we invite and would want the outside influences. As one of the callers mentioned earlier, you know, you want the doctor, the best doctor when you're sick, regardless of who it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the concern is that we not get too much outside influence to where we lose the flavor or the right as individuals and citizens to choose the direction that we should go.
Steve Muzon, what about Alan's concerns?
No, he's absolutely right to be precisely concerned about that, because the fact that over the last 75 years, the history of what architects and planners have done to run roughshod over the rights and concerns of the average individual is enormously horrible. I mean, look at the destruction of entire American downtowns in the name of urban renewal back in the 60s and thereabouts. And so I don't blame him a bit for being enormously concerned about that. I will say this, though, that the New Urbanists were actually born as a movement in reaction against the excesses and the huge mistakes of previous generations. And you know, so we're going, if anything, to an extreme in the other direction. And I will say this, the property line on the land is probably the longest surviving thing that you will ever have, even if there's 10 feet of soil dumped on it or if it's eroded or whatever. And we don't have any, we have no interest in erasing all the property lines, you know, as our forebears might have done, you know, the architects of 50, 75 years ago. You know, the first thing they wanted to do is erase property lines in an enormous chunks of of cities and recreate the whole city in their own image. We don't want to do that. We want to have respect for the fine-grained fabric of what was there. It's an enormously positive thing to build on, not only the plan of the town, but also the character of the architecture. You know, we don't want to do something that flies in the face of what people love the most.
Alan, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sometimes it seems like that ordinances or codes could do away with that. And again, we appreciate the help. We would just, and I know I can speak for up to 15 or 20 residents that have lost their home, including immediately family members, that in this restructuring that we do need, I mean, we appreciate the help. We're a humble but self-sustaining community that takes care of our own and can, when we have the resources, we can take care of ourselves. We went through Camille. We'll make it through Katrina. The tree workers, the power workers, the Red Cross, the people that came in and that helped us, all our thanks goes out. And this is also just as important as all the life-giving aid that was brought in, and we appreciate it. We just ask that to be sensitive and maybe not reinvent the wheel, but let's make the wheel better and maybe roll a little easier.
Alan, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Let's end up this email we got from Mark Porter in San Antonio, who wrote to us, I think the region needs to take a hard look at building codes. The Superdome couldn't even handle a Category 3 storm that didn't directly hit. I think that antebellum frame houses should not be the norm anymore. Houses and buildings need to be built higher and stronger. Steve, any reaction to that?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, I do. There's a tremendous amount of tradition in the area of, like, the raised cottage, for example, where you end up with the, just the service areas on the lower of the ground level, and the principal rooms would be up most of an entire story. That's a huge tradition in the area for that reason. There's also a big tradition in the area of that first level, if not the whole structure, being out of masonry as opposed to out of frame, but at least that basement level to withstand the surges and so forth. And so there's a tremendous amount of wisdom in the old stuff that has been there for a tremendous long time that we need to learn from, and we're hoping to do exactly that because there were reasons that all this stuff was done. It wasn't just style. That's our whole point. It's not just about style. There was reasons. It was we do this because behind every single item that you saw nearly.
Well, good luck with the charrette. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Delighted.
Steve Muzan joined us by phone from Miami, Florida, where he's an architect. And tomorrow he's heading up to Mississippi to meet with other people in helping to design the future of the Mississippi Gulf Coast.